Hi, and welcome to Season 2 of Big Sound Small Town, the podcast that spotlights the talented and diverse musicians in small towns and communities. This season, we're branching out to include the community of people who make it possible for musicians to be able to perform their music, the producers, the recording engineers, the venue owners, and many others, and as always, the small town musicians. Remember, small town doesn't mean small talent. Hear their stories. Today on Big Sound Small Town, we're in the Earl Scruggs Center in downtown Shelby, North Carolina. And my guest is an innovative music educator who teaches everything from world music to vocal workshops to leading drum circles. He's also a musician who works in numerous bands and music ensembles as well as playing in church. His name is Justin Harper, and welcome to the show, Justin.
Thanks, Sandy. I appreciate being here very much. I appreciate you.
Well, all right. Now, that's a pretty big intro there. You do a lot of things. Did I miss something that you do?
Well, I teach middle school orchestra at Crest Middle School. We also started a guitar ukulele program. So, you know, we've got your orchestral kids, cello, viola, bass, violin. And then the guitar program, orchestra program, is for the kids who kind of fall in between the cracks.
Yeah, sure.
You know, they didn't get in a formal band program like myself.
Right.
I was headed down in sixth grade to go test out the band program, and I realized my friends didn't go, so I turned around and went back to the classroom.
Gotcha.
I thought, this is not for me. Started a band, being a guitar player in middle school and high school, and then ended up teaching my friends, you know, how to play so that we could have a band together.
Right.
Wrote some songs and did lots of guitar solos and rock and roll and cover songs, and really had a good old time. One of the experiences I recall is I'm a ninth grader. The band was called Firestone. And so somehow, as a 14-year-old kid, I booked the Mooresboro Gym and booked a music festival there.
That's pretty cool.
So I got about six local bands, and all the kids were older than me in high school, made about 600 flyers, which the school resource officer obviously got a hold of. So we had our big music rock and roll festival, played some songs and original music, and had a heavy metal band there, all sorts of great stuff. And one of the guys came out and said, "Justin, there's police officers hiding next to the cars in the junkyard next door." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" He's like, "Go out there and see." And the next thing I know, the whole Cleveland County Sheriff's Department comes in and busts down this thing. Who's in charge here? As I slink away with my guitar case. We got all of our equipment home, and you know, I don't know who got in trouble for it, but it wasn't me. But
but it was your festival.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So
that's a good story there. Now that's great. So I guess music started for you at a very early age.
It did. My father worked at Radio Shack, so I always had access to keyboards and things like that. I remember tinkering around on a keyboard and thinking, "Oh, this sounds good." And then, you know, flip to the dog sound.
Sounds good too.
Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah. So, as I loved computers and science and all that stuff, I wanted to actually be an astronaut, because the thought of going into space just intrigued me so much. Then I saw an episode of MacGyver, and they're running out of oxygen. I said, "Ooh, I don't know about that."
I don't know. Maybe music sounds better.
Yeah,
that song sounds pretty good.
Right. Yeah. So music kind of took over. It was actually in fifth grade. I'd had a music teacher before that, and then she retired. And in fifth grade, there's a gentleman named Rod Mooney. And he became our new music teacher at Elizabeth Elementary School. And Rod had brought in his guitar one day, and he also brought in some other guitars for us kids to try and play. And Rod got on that guitar, and he started playing, just on his solo acoustic guitar, Dream On, the intro to Dream On.
Aerosmith, yeah.
And I had listened to Aerosmith and Tom Petty and Queen and Beethoven as a young kid, and those were Yeah, I love that kind of stuff. Oh, yeah. And to hear him play that song on one guitar and to process that music is more than what comes out of the speakers and to see that it can be created one piece at a time, just like the Legos that I played with. I was a Lego kid before they were really expensive. And so after hearing that song, I mean, it changed my life. And I went home and picked up the guitar that my dad had, the harmony guitar that my dad had bought me when I was six.
Which are coveted guitars these days.
Well, I've taken this one apart since and tried to do a neck reset. Anyway, went home, picked that guitar up, and I started figuring stuff out. I was determined. I wanted to play the guitar. Well, oddly enough, here we are. I'm 35 years old, you know, let's say 25 years later. About 5 years ago, I started at Crest Middle School as the chorus director. And guess who was the orchestra director there?
Must have been Rod.
Mr. Rod Mooney. And after a couple years, Rod retired. And guess what I did?
Rod's
I took over. So I do owe a lot to him and also to my father and my mom for being supportive. My dad would, he'd drive the Dodge van and the kids would load up and go to Mars Music or he'd drive us to a gig somewhere with all the equipment.
Support is key for a musician. Oh, people do not realize I came from a non-supported music side and it's a bigger chore in the fact that no one takes you serious. There's no respect there. They expect you to do something else with your life other than music.
Yeah.
So you're
I was blessed.
Yes, you were.
I certainly was. My father passed away when I was in college, but the support that he gave me and the things that he taught me just by love. He used to play and pick a little bit on his guitar. He played Miser Lou.
Yeah.
And he played Malaguena.
Oh, yeah.
And those songs, I think, really
set me up for world music. It did set you up for world music. I mean, I'm beginning to understand right now where that all came from, you know?
Yeah, and one day, you know, I had been playing for a while. It was probably about 14 or 15. And I think I played Miser Lou. And my dad said, okay, son, you're the guitar player now.
Yeah.
But one fond memory I recall, after teaching my dad the G minor pentatonic blues scale on his guitar, he called his cousin Buster, and he taught him, who lived in Texas, over the phone. They would talk have long conversations. Right. He taught him the minor pentatonic scale
that's
that I just
cool.
taught him over the phone, you know, 1,000 miles away. And when I was that young and I just saw that happening, I thought, wow, you know, education and passing it on and sharing the knowledge. And I think that probably had a bigger effect on me.
I mean, pretty early you decide that maybe beside playing music, you might want to be a music educator?
No.
No. Okay.
I didn't know.
I know. You don't see. I want to be the next guitarist, the next big guitarist.
So my lunch breaks at Crest High School involved me sitting out in the lobby area playing Sublime songs or Sweet Home Alabama, Skinner songs, and messing around. And people would come by and request stuff. And eventually, you know, somebody said, "Well, what are you going to do in college?" And I thought,
I'm going to busk just like I'm doing now.
Can you play guitar in college? And say, yeah, you can. I said, okay.
That's what I'm going to do.
I applied for a Gardner-Webb University and got in. Got a little bit of scholarship there because I'd been practicing a lot of classical music. And that brings us to about where our music that we have to listen to today is. This first track is called Dandelion in December.
Okay.
My friend Bobby Patat and I worked at Papa John's Pizza. I worked there for about 7 years of my life doing everything under the pizza sun. Flipping the dough in the air, delivering the pizzas, counting the produce and all, managing, closing. Anyway, Bobby
delivering.
And I picked delivering. Yes, sir. Answering the phone. Thank you for calling Papa John's Pizza. Shelby, this is Justin. Would you like to try the family special? Large pizza with two toppings, a large pizza of the works for only $19.99. Then they'd say, what's your specials?
Yeah.
Well, let's go through. So anyway, so Bobby and I had come up with this tune out there at his apartment, and we had half of it, and he had the other half, and we went and sat outside in December and looked, and there was one lonely dandelion, and I thought, there's the name, there's Dandelion in December. And we recorded this song with our manager. This is just me on this version, but in the future, Bobby and I had recorded it again. But this is my first, I guess, semi-professional recording done by someone else at his house in his home studio called Dandelion in December.
You've been at that time?
Oh, it was probably the year 2000, perhaps. So 16. Probably close to 16. Rob McKee was the one who recorded that for us. He's managing a Wendy's now somewhere in Ohio and building some fine looking guitars.
He's a good fella. Speaking of guitars, do you remember what you played that on?
I think that may have been my Takamine classical guitar.
Okay.
One of my first cheaper classicals. Later I had to buy a better one and traded a nice Gibson L50.
Yeah, but that was when you would have been in college at that point.
Yeah, right? No, actually that was a different guitar. I've had lots of guitars so far. I've been blessed.
And yes, that's a whole anthology that you could go in and do a whole podcast on guitars we've owned.
Right, which something that I've to say on that without talking too much about guitars. I'm now to the point where I really enjoy fixing guitars.
And that's good. That's great.
Hopefully one day plan to build something.
Oh, that's great.
But another aspect that around that same time, 16, 17, I had also been a songwriter for starting to write lyrics and all. And this next one is called Ignite, and it's probably one of the first songs that I wrote and recorded that have lyrics
now,
to
now
it.
Now, wait. At this point, are we doing but we've added vocals to the repertoire.
And also, at this point, I've found a cuatro, which is a Puerto Rican mandolin-like instrument, which, as we went down to Florida a lot, pawn shop scouring, I picked this up. So this next one also has that instrument as well as a recorder.
Okay, yeah.
So
it's a
multi-track.
Tell them what the recorder is.
The recorder is torture for every fifth grade elementary school music teacher. That's those little plastic things that you blow into, and they make this horrible squealing noise, which is why I always taught my fifth graders guitars to make sure that we got to teach them music notes, but it doesn't have to be the torture of a recorder. No offense to all the great professional recorder players out there.
Both of them.
So this one's called Ignite. And it's actually about a dream. This was a wild dream. I just laid down on my bed. I guess I was tired or maybe perhaps exhausted. And as soon as I laid down, it's like I immediately hit sleep and was going through this like colorful tunnel. It looked like if I was flying a plane, it would have been clouds through the plane. It was just really psychedelic and weird. You know, I wasn't on anything. But so I woke up from it. You know, I had to physically wake myself up out of this dream, and then wrote a song about it.
Okay.
Describe me my living.
So that was recorded on a, like one of those Yamaha 8-track recorders by a friend, Jesse Nicholson, who was the lead singer for a heavy metal band. So this next tune is around 2002, and I had joined this heavy metal band called Dead Seven. They've got a pretty good name around here in Cleveland County.
Yeah, they do.
They've, you know, since then broken up, but around the 2000s when, you know, that new style of heavy metal and Limp Bizkit and all that. We were far from the Limp Bizkit, more in the scream rock, Mudvayne, Slipknot.
I guess. Slipknot. That's actually where I was going, probably. Yeah.
And you know, it's a great experience. A little bit different from Dandelion in December and Ignite. So this is us live at a Battle of the Bands at the Money, which I think is in Charlotte or Greenville. And I was playing bass, five-string fretless bass with this group.
Oh, five-string fretless bass.
Here's just a little tip.
Very different.
Yeah.
Very different.
Yeah.
I feel like I need to get a tattoo.
Right, right. Which, being at Crest Middle School, which is a school that I went to, and we all, you know, we were Crest kids. I teach the lead singer's son now. He's in my orchestra playing bass.
Five-string fretless.
No, four-string fretless.
Yeah, four-string
fretless. It is fretless, though. So it's funny how things loop around.
It is.
So after doing this for a period of time, playing heavy metal, you know, I enjoyed it and energy was there. And there were some great things that came out of it, one of which is that I met the young lady who I am now married to.
Oh, really?
It was a little setup type thing. We didn't know each other, you know, blind date. And one of the guitar players introduced me, said, "Hey, I got this girl. She's too young for me, but I think you'll really like her." And so he brought her over one day. And I mean, it was, you know, literally love at first sight.
Oh, that's great.
You know, the chemistry was there. And it happened to be November 11th, which happened to also be her birthday. So I met her on her 15th birthday.
Oh, okay.
I'm now 35 years old, and we've, you know, for a couple years there, we dated on and off, but then we probably dated for about 11 years or so and got married. We've been married 8 years now.
That's great. That's fabulous. And you have addition.
And I have a 3-year-old daughter whose name, like my first guitar, is Harmony. That was not planned, but it did get realized at some point.
I mean, well,
wow.
And, you know, what better name for a musician's daughter?
And she is something else. She's her own other podcast. But I'll just say that the last time we played in Shelby, we played at the Dragonfly for the Art of Sound Music Festival. And she found the little kid's guitar there in the Dragonfly, picks it up, is strumming on it, and somehow made her way onto the front page of the local paper.
I saw that. I did see that.
So, you know, I can't complain.
It's the gene pool.
Yeah. We keep pushing for dentist.
Yeah,
then she can buy whatever instrument she wants. So, after my heavy metal experience, though, we played at the Ground Zero down in Spartanburg. And I looked and I saw a cat just walking around the bar. And so I asked the bartender, you know, I'm probably 16, 17. And I asked the bartender, what's the cat here for? And he said, the cat's here to eat the rats. And then I realized we paid a lot of money in gas and food and all and in strings to come down here and play this gig, and we're not leaving with any money. And on the other hand, I can just put on a tuxedo monkey suit and go play classical music.
So this is the solo classical.
Solo classical. I think that was a departmental recital at Gardner Webb University.
Okay.
Playing Lagrima.
So you're out doing this by yourself, picking up bucks on the side.
Yeah. I figure I can go, you know, make some money playing somebody's birthday party.
Sure.
Funeral.
Yeah.
And it's a little better than the heavy metal scene.
Well, they're different. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Less gear.
Also around that time in Gardner Webb, my professor, Dr. Olin Summers, who was my advisor, sat me down and said, Justin, what are you going to do with a degree in guitar performance? And I knew what was next. And I said, I guess go back to school and get my master's degree, because you can't really teach with guitar performance. And he said, why don't you change your major to music education, and then you can have a job. I said, sure. So that's when we started setting our sights towards music education.
Yeah.
Around the same time, I was about 18, and Art Mooney at the Bulldog Music, which was in Boiling Springs next to the university, had said, hey, Justin, you could teach guitar lessons. And I thought, well, I guess I could earn a little extra money on the side and teach some guitar lessons. So that's when I started giving private lessons there. I do appreciate Art for that suggestion and the support he's given me over the years. That was really, you know, once I realized and got hooked that I could teach people, and I didn't mind teaching people, it was another good source of income, and since then it's really become a big part of my heart.
Being pretty much your life's mission, just about, is it not?
Yeah.
I'm back with Justin Harper, and we're on his musical journey. And at this point, we've moved into him being a solo performer of musical, classical type musical.
Stuff.
Yeah.
So at the same rate, taking classical lessons and vocal lessons, jazz ensemble, and played the stand-up bass in the symphonic band and the orchestra at Gardner Webb. Guitar ensemble.
I did not know that.
I put in a lot of hours at Gardner Webb. Spent 6 years there. I also did a double major, so I did composition as another major. Also piano lessons. So I got a lot of catch up to do since I did not take a formal music program through the public school system.
Yeah.
So I immersed myself in music. In addition to working at Papa John's and going to Gardner Webb, also played on the side and joined some bands. However, music on the side for me was real fun. A friend of mine, Junior Davis, who plays with Harold Williamson and the New Wandering Souls.
Oh, yeah, yes.
Which is a quartet gospel group based here out of Shelby. So Junior and I were good friends, and he had a friend named Melvin Sanders, who was, I think Melvin was from Fayetteville originally, and he's probably in his 80s at least, and he was an old blues man. I mean, if you think that movie Crossroads, this was Melvin playing the slide guitar tuned Vestapool style. And my friend Joel Kerr played the saxophone on this. You can hear him in the background. Before I really owned a lot of nice music recording equipment, we recorded this in my mom's living room, probably around 2005. I call it The Ballad of Melvin Sanders. So that was me on bass, Junior on rhythm guitar, Melvin Sanders playing lead, kind of trading licks back and forth with my friend Joel.
Yeah, nice bass line.
Well, thank you,
nice
sir.
Walking bass line.
Well, and the, you know, the only way I could get hired as a college kid is playing the bass. I was a guitar player, but a lot of people know me as a bass player because of these years.
Same here, and it's not really what I've ever done, but it's been an easy way to work.
Right.
So
when I was about 20 or so, getting close to 21, met some new folks, and we started a band called Vibe, and it was Sandra Morgan and John Dwiggins and Joe Hinesley.
Oh, yeah, no,
who,
Joe.
After a
number
Joe's of
been
years,
on the show.
Yeah, Joe's been on the show, and we've later in life, Joe and I have played together. So we'd call it a party band, I guess. That was, you know, we brought the party. We were a very lively cover band. And Sandra had an awesome voice. John's lead guitar style was awesome. I mean, we really just had a lot of fun during those times.
You were a bass player in that outfit,
and bass.
Too.
Yeah, there's not. We have recording, but I couldn't get the CD to work. We did one original song. It was a bluesy song, and it was just good times.
Yeah.
Lots of me, Pulido, late nights.
Yeah. And well, I mean, that's, you got to pay those dues, you know. Yeah.
So after that, I then moved into another band in college called Calm and Collective.
Yes.
Mike McKinnish had recruited me, as he had many other folks over the years.
Nikeo play in that band?
Nikeo has been in that band, as well as Brennan Manus and Jackson Martin.
Yeah, Jackson, yeah.
A lot of great musicians. Anyway, I produced an album with Calm and Collective, so I had assimilated more recording gear, and really this was me paying my dues as far as on the recording side of music. So this is a little piece of one of the pinnacle pieces on that album with Phil Loveless, funky Phil Loveless, who's played for years with the
Ocean Boulevard
band. And so this is, I really enjoyed mixing Phil's sax solos and Vince on the drums and me on bass. Here we go, a little bit of Calm and Collective.
Thank you.
that band had a big following.
Oh, yeah. Phil really did great on that track. We overdubbed his MIDI flute sound and then two different saxophones.
I heard the big blend of horns. Yeah.
And Vince is playing the reggaeton beat.
Yeah, I heard that.
Before pop music took it over. Then we did a second album. I produced a live album, and I don't think we released it. And I ended up parting ways with that group. And it worked out for the best because I got to join an amazing local cover band based out of Oak Grove, Kings Mountain, called Harvest.
Yes.
With Tommy Brooks and Brian Edmondson.
I just aired their episode this past week.
Oh, right.
Fabulous musicians.
Oh, yeah. And they've had some great projects over the years.
Have.
I was blessed to be involved playing the bass for them. And this is one of the recordings we did, a cover of Eyes of the World by Grateful Dead. And, of course, I've popped into the little sweet bass solo here. So let's listen.
I'm taking
good
that
times.
That is Brian playing guitar.
Yes.
And that would be Tommy playing drums at that point.
Yep.
So different than the Oak Grove String Band.
Yeah.
Who was the horn player in that?
Phil Loveless.
Phil Loveless again.
Yeah.
Okay.
We doubled bands right there.
Okay.
Oh,
right.
We were busy. We were double dipping.
I knew that, but it's one of those things I like to bring out.
Yeah.
So.
Oh. So during all this time, I'd been playing bass to get gigs in bands, and really I was a guitar player dying to get out. So this next tune is a way that I was able to get some of this guitar out with the Gardner Webb Jazz Ensemble. They threw me a bone there. Dr. Whitfield threw me a bone and let me have the guitar solo in Herbie Hancock's Chameleon. So we fast forward a little bit to this. I've got, I remember I'm playing a Michael Kelly copy of a Gibson ES-335.
I kind of figured that's what
yellow flame top. I still have her, and oh, she's just so beautiful. And here she is singing a little solo for me.
That's a good job on a classic piece of music.
That was fun. So, music for me started to open up even more at this point. I think I was even to the point that working at Papa John's was fine and dandy, but as a student in school, I was making just as much money playing gigs.
Yeah.
And I was able to let that go, to let Papa John's go.
Yay.
Which, tip your pizza man or pizza woman.
You heard of that.
Tip your waitress. Tip your bartender.
And tip your band.
And tip your band. Public service announcement from Mr. Harper. Around the same time, I also, a friend from high school, Brandon Garlock, started a project, a songwriting project called The Fat Sparrows, mm-hmm. and I helped him produce his first album. We don't have a recording of it right now, but it's probably still out there somewhere. Last time I saw, there was three copies at the Goodwill in Shelby mm-hmm. of this album, which made me just wonder, you know, and I'm in my 30s and I see a copy of a CD that I produced in the Goodwill. Does that mean you've made it?
Well, I don't know. I'll give you a mama said I saw on, somebody sent me a text with the picture, said, mama said CD, $66 on eBay. And I'm thinking, you could have bought the whole lot when we did that for $66, you know?
Wow.
So I don't know, you know.
Wow.
It's weird where your projects turn up as time passes.
Wow. So. Who knows? Well, I went to Florida, to Tampa, Florida, where my grandmother lived, Rising Sun Studios, to master that with John Seda. And he's got a good studio and supports the local music scene down there. But that was a long night. Mastering an album.
I'm sure.
Lots of work goes behind doing a good recording. So, and again, at the same time, I'd finally graduated from school. So I started working as a teacher, an elementary school music teacher at James Love and Jefferson Elementary School. And still had my friend Junior Davis mm-hmm. at my side. And we continued to play with Harold Williamson, the New Wandering yeah. Souls quartet group. And so Harold got invited not too long after the Don Gibson Theater got started up, and he was invited to play the Gospel Explosion.
Mm-hmm.
And so he called me up to come sit in with the band, and this is a recording of the event. I think we got a little piece of a guitar solo here.
Okay, sounds good.
Junior Davis and I kind of traded licks back and forth, and poor Harold would try and stop us. And once you get two guitar players cutting each other's throat, it's hard to stop them. But let's see what we have.
Who was playing that organ?
Oh, Bobby.
Oh, okay.
I forget his last name.
I was wondering
Bobby
if it was Ray.
Davis. No, it wasn't Ray.
Okay.
Ray's a good one.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah, Ray.
Too
Harper.
Bad I didn't get to do Ray.
Yeah. He was another music teacher, Harper, that was.
Yes, he was.
Burns High School.
Yep.
Middle school. So I'm the second Mr. Harper.
Is there a third Mr. Harper around?
Well, there's a son,
yeah.
But he's in Charlotte.
Right, he's in Charlotte, yeah.
So I'm still composing music and recording music in my mom's living room. And this song, you know, I was trying to figure out, what do you give your girlfriend of many years on Valentine's Day? And I thought, well, I'll give her the best thing that I possibly can. And I composed four songs for her. Improvised, composed four songs and recorded them They were called The Many Faces of Love. And she still has that album and cherishes it to this day with hand-drawn cover art.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that's great.
And one of the songs that I put on there for her after playing the song and listening back to it, I said, I know the name of this song. It's called Mommy. And you can hear the interplay between the child and the mother. And so the child says, Mommy. And then the mother responds, What? Which ironically, here we are years later, and I heard my daughter going, Mommy. And she said, What? And I said, Honey, that's the song. And she said, I know. So listen for the interplay between those two, but this is something my wife cherishes, Mommy.
The modulation is teenage years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and the child, and it grows through the song.
That's
cool that you heard that.
I did.
So, at this point in my, I don't know if it's a career yet. I'm a music teacher.
That's a career, yeah.
My friend Jeff Nichter, who is a recording student at Appalachian State University, had called and said, hey, you know, you can rent this studio for like $100 a day. Is there a project you'd like to do? So I loaded up my car full of instruments. I've been collecting stuff even at that point. Don't ask me how many I have now, but I will say we're doing a program here at the Earl Scruggs Center, a friend of mine and I, and we'll have over 50 world instruments.
Wow.
Things that I've never seen before that I just say, I need to get this so I can teach my kids about
sure.
the world.
Yeah.
There's so much more to the music than just what we're exposed to.
True.
Anyway, I had a song that I wrote called Coffee Table, and this song kind of beats around the bush of a very important book that lies on the coffee table. And we used the piano there. I brought my little xylophone, electric guitar, slide guitar, bass, vocals. And I think in somewhere in this song there's also a rain stick.
Okay, yeah.
So we won't listen to the whole song, but there's some lyrics in here that, and if you listen carefully, you might figure out what is that book on the coffee table.
Among the cups and spoons in my living room, there sits a hidden treasure. It's hard to see it late at night when my mind feels like a desert. And I'm sore from work, what a day I've had trying to keep our world together. You know there's something special when I pick it up out those pages bound in leather. Well, I've done a lot of wrong things, but I know where I stand. I'll take the good in life, and if I mix it up, still need to wash my hands. I fall on my knees and I'm crying out, cause I don't know what to do. I turn the TV off when I'm dying to hear some real good news. Well, that book got me through college. That book takes me to work. It was there for all the long days when my spirit was broke. It'll be here, son, till the day I die. And I'll read it till I'm not able. The most important book in this whole life lies on the coffee table.